On the recorder, and I'll say that we are going to study now on Tuesday, May 22nd, Tractate Bava Kamma, Chapter 4, Mishnah 5. So we're going to read the Mishnah before we get to the Chumash. Okay, so that's again, Bava Kamma, Chapter 4, Mishnah 5, Perek Dalid, Mishnah Hey. Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, you guys in the back there, so far away with so many people, you can hear me? Mishnah, yeah, not so in the Mishnah, in the Mishnah, not in the Chumash.
Okay. I'm reading that chapter 22. Looks interesting, all of a sudden.
We're in the Mishnah. Okay, let's go.
Okay.
No, in the Mishnah, not in the Shi. Oh. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. Sky's falling down.
Mishnah 5, right?
Mishnah 5 of chapter 4.
Mishnah 5.
Mishnah 5.
Okay, got it.
Sure. Shnagach et Adam v'meit. Okay, we should know the words by now. Mm-hmm. An ox, that nagach, right, that gored et Adam v'meit. What's the law? Mu'ad, mishalem, kofer. If it's a mu'ad, a shur mu'ad, the deen is, the law is, that the owner of the shur, mishalem, kofer, he pays ransom. We'll come back later to what that means, ransom. V'tam, if the shur that killed the man is a tam, patur mina kofer, exempt from the kofer. So the owner of the ox doesn't pay kofer. And then
kofer
it says...
means what?
Ransom. Vizeh, vizeh, hayavim mita. And this one and that one are culpable for death. Who does that mean, this one and that one?
The ox.
Right, the ox. Not the man, not the owner, the ox.
Of course, the man loses the value of the ox. I assume that if they kill the ox, what happens?
Do you remember correctly? The ox is to be killed.
Yeah.
We didn't read that yet, but the ox is to be killed.
Yeah, okay.
So... if it's a tam, it doesn't have to pay kofar. Mm-hmm. If it's a muad, it has to pay kofar. And in addition, the zeh v'zeh chayvi mita, the ox is killed. Right? That's what
either
it says.
Either way, the ox is killed.
Either way.
Because
either way.
Ox.
Either way. And then it says, v'chein b'vein v'chein b'vat. And so with a son and so with a daughter. In other words, if the ox kills a son, in the sense of a boy, a minor... and so if the ox kills a daughter, a girl, the same law. The ox has to be killed. And if it's a muad, pays kofar. If it's a tam, doesn't pay kofar. That's the law. In any case of killing a human being, that's wrong, by the way, we'll see in a minute. It's not any human being. There are exceptions to the rule of killing a human being. The ox has to be killed. For example, right now, nagach evid o ama, noten shloshim slaim. If it gores a slave, male or female, noten shloshim slaim. Doesn't have to pay kofar. Whether it's a tam or muad, apparently, noten shloshim slaim. And does the ox have to be killed? Doesn't say.
What's slaim?
Slaim, I put on the back of the sheet... I put that a shela equals a shekel equals 4 dinar.
Well, it says Adam, though.
Shloshim.
It didn't
30.
Say, you know.
Shloshim is 30, right? 30. Yes.
So that's 30. A good point. What is the definition of Adam?
Well, it almost, in fact, I was going to.
Be like Ben Adam, I would think.
Yes, but that doesn't include an Evid? Does it include a non-Jew? Does it include a... Katan? Well, Katan, we said, yes, it does.
Yeah.
But what about an Evid?
Where do you say Adam?
In the third word of the Mishnah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that here Adam is not including the Adam, first of all, appears to be just an adult, because now we have to say v'chein b'ven v'chein b'vat. So we've got to say that the same thing applies, which to me says, well, Adam could be just an adult. It doesn't, may not include the Katan. But now it looks like the Adam is excluding all of these other categories.
Yeah, I would think that you're right.
And what about
but
the wife?
Isn't Adam used in other places to just...
It means a human.
Mean a human.
Depends where. Mm-hmm. We'll soon see more on this subject. Another few minutes.
Yeah, but it doesn't talk about a woman specifically, because it specifies a son and a daughter, mm-hmm. but it doesn't specify an Adam and an Ish.
So does Adam include woman? Good question.
That's a question. Mm-hmm.
And then that, by the way, it does.
It does.
It does.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem to include an Eved or an Ama. And let's just finish off the Mishnah. So we read, Nagach Eved o Ama, Noten Shloshim Slaim. Ben Shehu Yafeh Mane, Uven Sheino Yafeh, Ela Dinar Echad. Translation. If the shor gored the slave or maidservant, the owner has to pay 30 shkalim, 30 slaim, that's the same thing, mm-hmm. whether it's worth a maneh or whether it's worth nothing but a dinar. And the it is referring to the goring. No, I take it back. It's referring to the slave. Whether the slave is worth this or worth that, doesn't matter. You only have to pay shloshim slaim.
So is that considered the ransom?
Yeah.
For a slave?
That's a good question.
Is it a set mm-hmm. amount for every slave?
Can we call it the ransom? Let's go to the Torah for that.
Okay.
Let's now go to those verses in the Torah and see where all this comes from. And some of the questions we just asked will be answered. Not all of them. Oh, not most of them, but some of them.
Okay.
So we're on page 422 in the Art Scroll. This is the book of Shemot, chapter 21, verse 28 and henceforth.
Okay.
Verse 28 and henceforth. In Hebrew, it begins, "V'chi yigach shor et ish o et isha."
Here it says,
if an ox shall gore a man or a woman, mm-hmm. that's explicit in the Torah, mm-hmm. ish o isha, and he shall die. In other words, the person that the ox gores, man or woman, dies. The ox shall surely be stoned. Stoned. The Hebrew says, "Sakol yisakel hashor." The shor will be stoned. Its flesh may not be eaten. And the owner of the ox shall be innocent. The ox gets killed, the owner is scot-free.
Where does it say innocent? Naki?
In Naki, yes, yeah, exactly. Naki. Clean. Free. But if it was an ox that gores habitually from yesterday and the day before yesterday, and its owners had been warned but did not guard it, and it killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and even its owner shall die.
Whoa.
But then it says in verse 30, and I'll read this in Hebrew, the beginning of verse 30, verse Lamed, the second line from the top in Hebrew, the last word of the line, V'im kofer yushat alav. The English translation is that when an atonement payment shall be assessed against it, against him.
Mm-hmm.
Kofair. Atonement or ransom. He shall pay as redemption for his life whatever shall be assessed against him. So let's summarize so far. So we're talking about death here. The ox killed someone, a man or a woman. Ish o isha. Ooh. If the ox is a muad, then the owner has to die. But atonement payment can be assessed against him.
So the ransom is really for the life of the owner.
It looks like the ransom is for the life of the owner.
That's why they use that expression.
Right? That's what it looks like.
Ransom.
The owner is supposed to die, mm-hmm. but ransom can be placed upon him, which presumably means he can live if he pays.
If he can pay.
Okay. That's the case of the muad. Because in the muad, the owner is responsible. He should have guarded. In the case of the tam, there is no death penalty for the owner of the ox. He's naki. He's innocent.
How did they decide?
Just one more thing. But in both cases, the ox has to die, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a muad, whether it's a tam, the ox has to die. The difference between the cases is in the responsibility of the owner. In the case of a tam, the owner is naki. He's innocent. In the case of a muad, he's guilty of the death penalty, but a ransom can be placed upon him.
When do they make the decision that an ox is gone from a tam to a muad?
That we said three times at gores, and there were witnesses to the fact, and the owner was warned. It happened once, it happened twice, it happened three times, don't do it again.
Okay, so this is after the ox has already gored three times and has been declared a muad.
Yeah. Okay. Which means it could have gored another ox or it could have gored another animal.
Ooh.
But then suddenly the fourth time it kills a person.
Ooh. So let me put it in these terms. You gave an answer to a question. What's the question?
The question is, what makes an ox mawad for purposes of killing a person? It didn't have to kill three other people. It could just have gored something.
Okay, that's a very good question. Now I'm going to say it differently. What's the kushya? Not a question, but a difficulty. Remember, we did this once a few years ago. A difficulty is when you say, how could it be X? Behold, Y.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a question of information, what's the law, but how could you say X? The evidence indicates Y. So in this matter of the ox that becomes a muad, there's a big, big question that everyone should be jumping up on the table and asking, a big kusha, a difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And the difficulty is, if you tell me that the minute the ox gores a human being, it has to be killed, how does an ox ever get to be muad?
That's right. It can't.
That's the kusha.
Yeah.
You asked it as a question, not as a kusha.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we're talking about.
Assuming that it has to kill three people before it's declared muad.
So then, Tom came up with an answer. He said, I guess it is that to become a muad, it doesn't have to kill three people. Perhaps killing three oxen is enough.
Or just goring three oxen.
All these things are questions we'll have to ask. The Gemara asks all these questions. We're going to see it in another half an hour.
Well, I thought we had a definition of muad.
Until now, we've always talked about oxen goring oxen. We're now talking about oxen goring human beings.
Right. But still, it doesn't say any special kind of muad. It just says muad. I mean, it's a bad ox.
So that's the question. An ox, it's muad for goring animals. Is it muad for goring human beings?
Well, I would think so.
Perhaps not. Perhaps it's an ox that gets angry.
Didn't we talk about this before, like different things?
Well,
we talked on different days, being goring on different days, goring children as opposed to adults. We talked, but we never discussed the question, is an ox that's muad for animals, muad for human beings?
Well, I think we did, but we didn't discuss it.
Because the rabbis always go out of their way to try to avoid a death penalty.
A death penalty for human beings.
For human beings.
Oxen are different.
Oh, no, but for the human being. So they might just have a different definition of muad if it saves the life of the human.
No, but they've done kofar.
Right, here we don't have to be talking about a human life that's at stake because of kofar.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's
so
relevant.
So they solved the problem of the death of the owner through kofar.
If the owner has money to pay.
Right. The owner is down to his last ox.
Right, the halakha is that we never kill we never execute the owner of the ox. But the verse is saying that essentially, in theory, he's guilty of the death penalty, but we don't kill him. He should just know how serious this is. We'll see how the Rambam formulates it a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, let me ask a question.
Okay.
Does anything seem problematic? Does anything seem to contradict another verse in the Torah? This matter of kofar, of a ransom to save the guy's life. Anyone know of a verse in the Torah that says you can't do that? We never take kofar to save someone's life?
Well, you did say that you can't pay for a life.
Yeah.
Where did we say that? What context?
We pay for firstborn.
Okay. But that's not where we're going to...
That's not because they're going to die.
No.
Yeah.
This is at the end of the book of Numbers.
Okay.
In the framework of the Rotseach B'Shogeg, the person who kills accidentally.
Oh, and goes to the city of refuge.
Goes to the city of refuge. Uh-huh. Right. Look in Bamidbar, chapter 35, verse 31. Bamidbar, that's Numbers, mm-hmm. chapter 35.
Which is
35:31.
You know what? That's what I wrote in my notes. But it doesn't seem to be... Oh, I'm in the wrong book of the Torah. What do you like to say about that? 35:31.
because it was customary for people to go and collect the payment when they
v'lo tichu kofer
from the family.
The nefesh rotzeh.
What page?
932 at the top of the page. You shall not accept kofar for the life of a killer who is worthy of death. He shall surely be put to death. That's in the case of someone who killed purposely.
Mm-hmm.
You shall not accept ransom. You shall not accept kofar for one who fled to a city of refuge to return to dwell in the land before the death of the Kohen. If someone killed accidentally, he has to be put in the city of refuge and he can't leave there until the death of the reigning Kohen. And you can't accept kofar to save someone either from being in the city of refuge or from the death penalty if it was a case of killing purposely. You don't accept kofar. And by the way, we once had a discussion on this, I think, with the lawyers in the room in this class or another class. In American law, there's such a thing as wrongful death.
Yeah.
Right.
In which money is to be paid. But in the Torah, someone who causes the death of someone else never, ever, ever has to pay a cent because we never put value on human life. Either the killer goes scot-free because we don't have enough evidence against him, or he gets to go to the city of refuge because he killed accidentally, or he has to be executed because he killed purposely, but he doesn't have to pay a cent. Because that's what we learned here in Numbers chapter 35,
because
verse 31.
Put a value
on the life that he snuffed out. Except for the fact our verses today seem to contradict this. Because we just learned, right, let's go back where we are.
Because here it clearly says...
right, that my ox, my muad ox, gores you.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. And you die.
Mm-hmm.
It says that I am guilty, I'm culpable of the death penalty. But it also says when kofar will be assessed against him, he shall pay it as redemption for his life. Redemption for his life. How can there be redemption for his life? We just learned in Bamidbar, in the book of Numbers, there's never any kofar. Because you can't put a value in human life.
The difference is between the human killing the human and the ox killing the
ox. Yeah, that seems to be the case. That the principle really is.
Well, what's the why? Why would that be the difference?
Not so clear. Right, if I kill a human being, then there's no way any amount of money can be involved in my guilt.
But the ox is like manslaughter.
But the ox...
It's like being careless and killing someone.
Yeah, but Mary Beth says it's still kofar for human life.
It is.
Right, so the Torah really seems to be compromising on its essential principle.
Yeah.
But it's not... Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, either way, that... Yeah, I was going to say, it was unintentional on the part of the person whose life is going to be given up. In other words, that person whose ox gore somebody can't go to the city of refuge, or can they?
No, there's no need to go to the city of refuge. If I killed someone accidentally, city of refuge. If my ox killed someone, then there's no city of refuge, just payment. So there really does seem to be a slight tension here.
And is it just, are we talking about, I mean, people, city of refuge, stuff between people, murder between people, or accidental manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, oxen? I mean, what about carts? What about... I mean, this is talking about...
Oh, wait a minute. We've got a muad ox here.
Yeah, but I'm... Why is emphasis on oxen?
And
you know, what about other animals? Oh, what about...
Same thing with other animals.
Indirect.
Mm-hmm. Dogs, rabbits... Yeah. If the rabbit is muad to kill people, and it kills
only in
something that's alive,
Monty Python.
No, but dogs are
definitely muad.
Dogs can be.
Okay. A dog can be muad.
And they're trained.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it have to be something that's alive? It's not like a runaway cart.
Okay, that's a different category. That's a different category.
Because it talks in this about if you you throw a rock and it falls on somebody, and and so that's a different thing. It's accidental. It's not direct and dealt with somewhat differently, but you still have the city of refuge.
Right. That's similar to the case of the axe handle flying off. Yeah. Remember that case?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So that goes with the...
That's a human action.
Still humans. Human action. There's nothing living involved. So it's like when there's something alive.
An ox and a dog have their own mind, right? Yeah. Okay. I should have watched them.
Independently, it moves and it acts and it does things independent of the human, in the sense that the axe that the human is like an extension of the arm, but with the animal acts on its own volition.
Okay.
Let me give you a Mishnah that we learned to remind you. We once talked about a Mishnah that said that someone fell and he's lying on the ground and someone else trips over him.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed the question, that person who's lying on the ground, how is he categorized? Is he considered to be Adam Hamazik, a man who does damage, or is he a boar? Is he an inanimate object that causes someone else damage? And there are, as we've learned, different categories of damage, and sometimes we might find out that a man is classified as a man, but sometimes it might be classified differently. Mm-hmm. But one thing that's sure is a man is never an ox. In other words, the law of animals are separate from the laws of damage that human beings could do. A human being could be functioning as a man, it could be functioning perhaps as a boar, perhaps he could be functioning as Aish, as fire, that's something that spreads forth. We'll look into that as time goes on. But a man, an animal, two different things.
Okay.
So now, let's go back to the let's go back to the Torah. Mm-hmm. And we have two or three verses there in Shmot on page 424 and 425. So to summarize, we see that the ox that kills, a human being has to be killed. If it's a tam, then that's all that happens. If it's a muad, then the owner is culpable of the death penalty, but what happens actually is that a kofar is put upon him as redemption for his life. And then in verse 31 it says, whether it gores a ben or a bat, in accordance with this judgment shall be done to him. That's the source of what the Torah says, a ben or a bat.
Mm-hmm.
Comes from here. If the ox shall gore a slave or a maidservant, 30 silver shekels shall he give to his master, and the ox shall be stoned. Ah, so it says here explicitly, the ox is stoned.
Is stoned. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that wasn't clear from the Mishnah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
If the ox is stoned when it kills a slave. Let's just answer the few questions that I asked on my sheet. My sheet said, the first question meant for us to find this passage in the book of Exodus, which we just did. Where does the Torah discuss the case of Shor Shnagach et Adam v'meit? That's the case we just read in the Torah, in chapter 21 of Exodus. When it says on my sheet, when the Mishnah says Muad Mishalem Kofer, the Muad pays ransom, what is it teaching beyond what the Torah already says? Right, the Torah says pay kofar. So what is the Mishnah teaching us over and above what the Torah says?
But the Torah says that, first the Torah says that the man is subject to death.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says that he can pay kofar. Where it seems
he can be assessed against.
He can be but it seems like the Mishnah is just going directly to kofar and assuming that we're not going to put this man to death.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because the Torah said, Im kofar yushat alav, if kofar will be assessed upon him. The art scroll translates the word im, if, as when. Why does the art scroll do that? Because the art scroll read the Mishnah. Right? Mm-hmm. The Torah says if. But the art scroll knows that the halakha is not if, but it's rather when.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a fact. So, if we only had the art scroll translation, we would say the Mishnah is superfluous. But knowing that the art scroll translation is not exact here, The Hebrew says im, we understand the Torah is interpreting the im and telling us it's not if, it's rather when. Question 3. Who do you think the payment is made to? Okay, he has to pay kofar. Who does the owner of the ox pay? The guy is dead.
The family.
That's one possibility. In Hebrew, we say that's the yorshim, the inheritors. Right? Mm-hmm. The inheritors. There's one other possibility, which you might have theoretically thought of.
The Beit Din?
Yeah, the Beit Din.
Oh.
But it's not the Beit Din. The halakha is the yorshim, the inheritors. Get the money. Question 4. This really opens us up
very well.
Say it again. Question 4. How does the ruling fit in with what we find in Bamidbar chapter 35 verse 31 that says you shall not take kofar? We just saw that, so that's a very good answer. Not very well. Of course, there's a technical difference. This is about a human being killing. This is about an ox killing. But as far as the principle goes, we really do have a certain tension here, it looks like. How do you think that such an ox could become a muad if the law states that even a tam who kills a man must be stoned? And we talked about that 5 minutes ago. Perhaps it's because it killed 3 animals, we said. Can you think of another answer? Let's say the halakha is that in order to become a muad for killing people, you have to kill people. So how could it be that this ox killed 3 people and still lived to tell about it, if even a tam is supposed to be stoned the minute it kills 3 people? Any solutions?
I mean, kills anybody, not 3 people.
No, I'm saying if it kills a person it's supposed to die, how did it get to kill 3 people?
Well, it could have gone on a rampage.
Of course, it could have gone on a rampage and killed 3 at once before we got a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Easy answer. Question 6. When the Mishnah says ben and bat, what terminology would we normally have expected the Mishnah to use? We don't usually say ben, katan or ktana, right? Yeah. The Mishnah used the term ben or bat because it took it from the Torah, as we just saw. That's question 7. And now question 8 requires the use of calculators. I'm kidding.
What happened to question 7? Why did it?
Because it took it from the Torah.
Because it's a direct quote.
Oh, just simply.
Yeah.
What the Torah says.
What appears to be a bit incongruous vis-a-vis the monetary figures mentioned at the end of the Mishnah. So the end of the Mishnah said that when the ox kills a slave, the owner has to pay 30 slaim. Whether the ox was worth maneh or whether the ox was worth only a dinar.
The ox?
I thought it was the person.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
The person. Right. The person. I'm sorry. So if we turn to the back of my sheet, I have a little tiny chart there about the value of money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that chart well and plug it into the last words of the Mishnah, you'll see that these last words of the Mishnah just don't make any sense.
The owner must pay 30 shekels.
We're paying 120 dinar, regardless of whether it's worth may a maneh, and a maneh is 100 dinar. So we've got 100 of those. Or whether it's worth just 1 dinar. And I guess the thing is, it doesn't matter what the value is. It could be a much more valuable servant, or it could be a servant that's worth almost nothing. You're going to pay this fixed price.
Yes.
That's what it seems like.
That's true. But there's still something problematic here.
The 33 shekels is more than even the most valuable one. It said even if it's worth 100 dinar, but that's only 25.
No, it says maneh, 100 maneh.
So you're going to pay a substantial
100
maneh. Amount.
That's right. It talks about 100. Does it talk about 100 maneh?
What does the text of your Mishnah say?
Maneh
of the Mishnah.
Oh, you have a different text than I do.
Oh.
Your text says maneh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Again, we have another problem with the text. I have the text that is found in the manuscripts of the Mishnah. And it says mane. It doesn't say mea mane.
It just says mane. It
just says mane.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And a mane is only 25 slaim. Which means the Mishnah reads as follows. That you have to pay 30 slaim whether the slave was worth 25 slaim or was worth only a quarter of a sela.
But in this case...
But you should have said... If whether it's worth more than 30 or less than 30.
That's right, which would make more
That's
sense.
That's why your text has been doctored to make it make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise you're paying more than the value, even at the most valuable state.
Right.
So which wouldn't make sense.
My text that says maneh is the way all the Mishnayot say, but it's simply wrong. It's clearly a faulty text. And the text that you have in front of you has been corrected on the basis of the way the Mishnah appears in the Talmud Bavli, in the Babylonian Talmud. And we can see that because I printed on the sheets that I gave you the way the Mishnah appears in the Babylonian Talmud. And that's at the bottom of the first side of the sheet, where it says Talmud Bavli, Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph, and you can see it brings the Mishnah at the very end, the very end, the middle of the last line, Bein Shu Yafeh Mea Mane. And on the base of that, the editor of the English Mishnah fixed it.
Has fixed it.
What's Yafeh mean?
Yafeh means worth.
Worth.
Okay, so that's a basic introduction to the Mishnah. And now we're going to look at the Gemara, an interesting Gemara, right at the beginning of what the Talmud Bavli says about this Mishnah. You ready? So we're reading from what I photostat on the sheet, and it says, Talmud Bavli, Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. Got the place? And then it begins with an abbreviation, Gimel Mem, which means Gemara. Shortened, it's only the first two letters of the word. V'chi me'achar demitam katlinan lei muad heichi mishkachet la. Translation. V'chi me'achar, and since demitam. Demitam is three words. De,
me,
tam. From that tam. In other words, since from that it's a tam, katlinan lei, we kill it. As we kill it even when it's just a tam, the first time it kills a human being. Since from tam, we kill it, muad heichi mishkachet la. A muad, how do you find it? Heichi, how? Mishkachat, find, la, it. How do you ever find the muad if the minute it comes becomes a tam, you kill it? And that's the question we asked 15 minutes ago. And the Gemara says, Amar Rabbah, hacha, b'may askinan. Here, in what are we discussing? Right, hacha, here, b'may, in what? Askinan, discussing. Here, in what are we discussing? Kagon shamduhu lishlosha b'nei adam, which literally means, for example, kagon, for example, shamduhu, that they estimated it lishlosha b'nei adam, for three people. What does that mean? It means they saw an ox that didn't kill three people, but we, from its behavior, say to ourselves, he would have killed three people had they not run away. We saw him run after someone, and we said, he would have killed that guy had the guy not jumped over the fence. And then it happened again, and happened again. So, the ox is amduhu l'shlosha b'nei, and we estimate that he would have killed three people. That's how it becomes a mu'ad. It just happens the guy remained alive, and therefore we didn't stone the ox because we couldn't stone it, didn't do it. But it's a muad. And then on the fourth line, I'm sorry, the second line, the fourth word, Ravashi Amar Umdana Lav Klum Hu. Estimates, not anything they are. In other words, you can't do that. That's not a muad. If it tried to kill three people but didn't, it has to kill to be a muad. How do you know that this ox had the guts actually to draw blood? Perhaps he just would have petted the guy and not hurt him if the guy had not run away. So that's not a good answer, says Rav Ashi. Ela hachabamaya skinan? Rather here, in what are we discussing? No, it's Rav Ashi will give a different answer. Kagon shesikin shlosha bnei adam. For example, that it endangered three human beings. What does that mean? It means the following. That this ox, he gored someone and sent the guy to the hospital, but he didn't die. Mm-hmm. Then the ox gored someone else, sent him to the hospital and didn't die. Then the ox gored someone else, sent him to the hospital and didn't die. And then all the three people died. So in other words, after he got the first person, we didn't stone him because the guy wasn't dead. After he got the second person, we didn't stone him because the guy wasn't dead. But after the third guy, they all died. And then he became a muad. Retroactively. So that's a good solution. Right? That's a way to become a muad. Of course, it's a pretty rare case.
Right.
But that's a way.
Unless he got all three at one time.
So what is that? Okay, so how does... what's the translation of the first part of that?
Tell me which words?
The Ella, is it Ella?
Ella, hacha b'may askinan?
Yeah.
Rather, here, in what askinan are we dealing? Are we talking? Are we discussing? Okay. So, we first gave an answer to our question, and Rav Ashi rejected it. Rav Ashi then gave an answer that seems to be good, but it's a little bit rare. So the Gemara goes on to look for another answer. Rav Zavi Damar, Kagon Sharag Shlosha Behemot. For example, that it killed three animals, which is exactly what Tom said. Mm-hmm. But then the Gemara says, Umuad Leveima. Havi muad ladam? Question mark. A muad for an animal is a muad for a person? Is it? Right? Now, you say that's an easy way to become muad, to kill three animals, but are you sure that that would make it muad for human beings? Are you sure? I'm not sure. And therefore, we'll have another suggestion. Ella amar Rav Shimi. Rather, said Rav Shimi, Kagon Sharag Shlosha of De Kochavim.
Oh.
For example, it killed three idolaters. What's the assumption behind this approach? That if you kill an idolater, the ox isn't stoned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's only stoned if it kills a human being.
A human being not being an idolater.
Right, I'm being facetious, but I'm trying to make a point.
Right, mm-hmm.
That the Torah said, if an ox gores an ish or an isha, a man or a woman, it has to be stoned. Then the Mishnah seems to be assuming, not the Mishnah, the Gemara seems to be assuming that an idolater is not in the category of an ish or an isha. Right, that's the assumption. I'm not saying I like it.
Yeah,
that's the exegesis. That's the understanding
stretch.
We have to be involved in here.
It's like the
real stretch.
But Jen, you understand that you're the one that said earlier that Evid doesn't seem to be an Isha and Isha.
I understand. It's just that.
So really, what the Gemara is saying really follows from the verses, because the verses
does.
Seem to imply that Isha Isha is one thing, Evid is something else.
It's a different category.
So if Ebed is something else, then also Oved Kochavim is something else.
Right.
Again, you don't have to like it, but we should understand where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And Eved is in the Torah or in the...
In the Torah we saw that killing an Eved is in a different category than killing an Ish and Isha.
And an Oved Kochavim would be even lower than killing an Eved.
Would be even lower. Why lower? Because an Oved Kochavim is a half-Jew. Because an Eved is a half-Jew.
Eved is a half-Jew, but an Oved Kochavim is a pure idolater.
Right. Yeah. So that seems to be the logic going on here. So the assumption is that an Oved Kochavim is not an Ish and Isha, and therefore the ox won't be stoned if it kills one, but the ox will become a muad.
So now we're going to ask,
we're not killing a human?
Right.
we're going to ask, well, wait a minute, is the same as being muad for Ovdei Kochavim, the same as muad for...
Right, that's the next line that Jan is reading. Muad lo Ovdei Kochavim have muad li Yisrael? Is an ox that kills an idolater, does it become muad for killing Yisrael? In other words, of course you're right that if it kills the idolater, we don't stone it. But you assume that if it kills three idolaters, it's muad for killing all people? No. Perhaps if it's muad for killing idolaters, it's only muad for killing idolaters, but not for killing Jews.
And of course, this is a very smart ox if it seems to know the difference.
Well, look at Mishnah 6 already.
This ox is smart.
So let me actually work with what Jan just said. You might actually be right. In other words, there are two different ways of reading this. Either we read it simply as a essential statement of the definition of the thing. This is a Jew and this is an idolater, and we say muad for this is not muad for this, simply because there are two different essential things in a kind of metaphysical sense. Or we can take what Jan said seriously. Jews and non-Jews did wear different clothing in those days. Mm-hmm. And you could take it not as a metaphysical statement, but as a real statement of the habits of oxes. This ox might be attracted to the clothing that non-Jews wear, but not attracted to the clothing that Jews wear. That's a possibility. I'm not saying it's...
So it was a fashion statement.
It's a fashion statement. Right? So it's hard to know which way to take it. So after we asked, is it that a muad for Oved Kochavim is muad for a Jew? And we don't know if it is, therefore that can't be our conclusion of how the ox becomes muad. Ella Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, which is Reish Lakish. May have heard of him. Kagon Sha'arag Shlosha Bnei Adam Trefa. Now you might ask, what is a Ben Adam Trefa? You know the word Trefa, mm-hmm. right? That's meat that's unkosher. Right. There's also such a thing as human beings who are Trefot. The category is like this. Anyone who has a disease which will probably kill him within a year, that person is called a trefa.
Wait, if you have cancer, you're a trefa?
Let's say cancer. And the implications are the following, and this is going to really throw you for a loop. If I kill a human trefa, I did something that was forbidden, but the courts cannot execute me. Because he would have died anyway.
Die with him.
Again, that doesn't mean it's allowed to kill a trefa. There's nothing to do with euthanasia.
Right.
You're not allowed to kill
a
human being, but you're not punishable for it. And therefore, what happened if we have an ox that killed a human trefa? Since a human being who kills a trefa wouldn't be executed, well, all the more so, an ox that kills a human trefa shouldn't be executed.
Oh, so the ox can kill three of those.
Three of those, it won't be executed. So it becomes a muad. Eureka, we found the solution.
And then, then we'll know it's a muad.
If it kills three of those.
Way we know that it's muad.
Because we have evidence, we have witnesses.
We didn't know that it was muad.
No, but we didn't kill it. because you don't get killed for killing a treifa. But if you kill three treifot, you do become a muad.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But then the Gemara says what you're expected to say. Muad l'treifa, havi muad l'shalem. Are you certain that an ox that becomes a muad for killing a treifa is also muad for killing a real human being, a full human being, a shalem?
We're back to our same.
And here, of course, you can't say that people who have cancer wear different clothing than people who are
right.
don't have cancer.
Right.
So here it's really hard to understand. The Gemara seems to be actually pulling our leg. They smell different.
Yeah, somebody who's going to die.
Well,
animals seem to.
Animals do.
Animals
pick up
can
those
sense
scents.
Human.
That's
death.
True.
Okay, you guys got me. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have dogs for that.
You know what?
Yeah,
dogs
do.
And cats.
They
That's
have
right.
dogs that can
and
sniff
dogs
out like you're
cats.
Doing cancer now.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And you know what? It could be that the rabbis of the Gemara were much more sensitive to what oxen can do and can't do than I am, because we don't know anything about oxen. So I guess you guys are right. Okay, that's interesting. So,
but what? Now I still don't get it. What they're doing with the idolaters? If
we finish with that,
I didn't quite get it.
So
well, they're
we
saying that those people are not Jews and they don't count.
Okay, so
if you kill three of them,
the ox for it.
If you kill three of them, then it becomes a muad.
No, he said perhaps not.
Oh,
perhaps it's a muad only for killing idolaters, but not for killing Jews.
Okay, so it's
not even.
They're not even on the category with other oxen.
I
didn't say that.
Even right,
you might think they were, but they're saying we're not sure they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the Gemara finally says something that's more prevalent. Ela mara papa dekatal va'arak la'agama. Dekatal va'arak la'agama. Translation. That it killed and fled to the fields. That it killed and fled to the fields.
Oh, so it escaped.
Yeah. It killed a human being. A normal human being. We have evidence. We have witnesses. We brought the witnesses to court. We warned the owner, but the ox escaped before we can kill it, and then it killed someone again, right? So that's the most logical thing, probably, how an ox becomes a muad for killing people. It escaped.
It
got away.
So it's very after all of this, it's unlikely that an ox would be muad,
except for the case of the wild ox that just escapes all the time,
right?
And that's very possible, right?
Well,
if it killed a person, it's
to
not.
Me, if your ox killed my mother or something,
God
I'm going to say if that ox has killed two dogs or three dogs, it's muad.
Because that was a possibility we had, right? That muad for Bema is muad for human beings, but we weren't sure about that, so we looked for a different possibility. And here's a different possibility.
It's not there, it's not field here. So they've got a different word for field, right? What was
Agma, it really means the area around the lake.
Oh, okay.
I said field. It's pretty close.
Yeah,
it went far away. We can't get a hold of it.
But an area that where we couldn't
catch it.
Yeah.
And what's arak mean?
Arak means to flee.
Oh, to flee. That's
in modern Hebrew, arak means to be AWOL from the army.
No.
It means to desert. Mm. So now after we saw the Mishnah, and we saw the verse in the Torah, and we saw this little snippet of Gemara, what I'd like to do is simply see the way the Rambam codifies the laws we've been learning. So I have it right here. The Rambam, of course, it's the Mishnah Torah. In Hilchot Nizkei Mamon, the laws of monetary damages, Perek Yud. Monetary damages means when my money, my possessions, cause damage. In this case, my possessions killed a human being. So in the first halakha, the Rambam says, "Shur shehi mit et hadam," the ox that killed the human being, "bechol makom," in any case, "ben gadol ben katan," whether killed a adult or a minor, "ben eved ben ben chorin," whether it killed a slave or a free person, "echad tam vechad muad," whether a tam or muad, "harei ze niskal," behold, it is stoned. And we saw that in the Torah, right? That's a verse from the Torah. "Vim himit et hagoy, patur kedinehem," and if it killed a non-Jew, it's exempt, and we learned that from the Gemara, right? From all the stuff we just saw about the Oved Kochavim. But the Rambam adds one word, kidinehem, like their laws. That's an explanation that the Rambam adds, that's not found in the Babylonian Talmud, of why the ox that kills a non-Jew is not stoned. Just like their laws. If our ox kills a non-Jew, well, we know that if their ox killed a Jew, they wouldn't kill their ox, so we're not going to kill our ox. We're not going to cause ourselves a monetary loss in a case that they wouldn't do the same for us. That's the way the Rambam tries to give a more palatable explanation of what seems to be here blatant discrimination between Jews and non-Jews. And remember, we had a whole matter of like their laws a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So the Rambam's trying to put that in the same category. Mm-hmm. But to tell you the truth, I myself am a bit confused by this, because this matter of like their laws could be shooting ourselves in the foot. Because if this is an ox owned by a Jew, then I assume the ox is around Jewish people a lot. If it killed a non-Jew, and we don't kill the ox because we say like your laws, in the end it's going to end up killing a Jew. That's what it seems to me.
That's what it seems, yeah.
But the Rambam doesn't say like that. Okay? So halacha bet. V'chad hashur v'chad shar behema. Chaya v'of. Shimitu harei elu niskalin. This is a question Mary Beth brought up, I think. Whether an ox or whether the rest of animal, wild animal, fowl, that killed, behold, these are stoned. So whether it's your rabbit or your bat or your piranha, right? If it kills, it is to be stoned. Can you imagine stoning Mary Beth's piranha?
I can imagine Mary Beth's piranha. Stoning that rabbit.
Okay. Ma bein tam sharag et adam lemuad sharag. What's between, what's the difference between a tam that killed the man and the muad that killed? What's the difference? The answer is shahatam patur min hakofer, that the tam is exempt from kofer, v'muad chayav b'kofer, and the muad is obligated in kofer, meaning that it's not a decision of the Beit Din, but rather the Beit Din never kills the owner of a muad that killed three times. Rather, the guy is chayav b'kofer, u'bilvad shiyeh muad laharog, as long as it was muad for killing. It can't be muad just for hurting, just for injuring. It has to be muad for killing, and then we tell the owner that he has to pay kofar. Halacha gimel. Ho'il v'chol beima chayav v'of shahargu adam niskalin. Translation, since all animals, wild animals and fowl that kill people are stoned, heyach yimatzei muad larog ad sheyishalmu balav et hakofer. How will be found it to be muad to kill, such that it will pay its owner's kofar? That's a simple question. How do you ever find the muad? It's supposed to be killed the minute it kills a person the first time.
Same,
it's just
thing
asking.
We had with the ox.
Same thing we had in the Gemara. The Rambam comes to bring the Gemara in his book of Halakha in a clear, codified fashion. Kagon Shaharag Shlosha Goyim. For example, that it killed three Goyim, the Harka Harag Yisrael, and afterwards it killed the Yisrael, a Jew. Shemuad le Goyim, Hareze Muad le Yisrael. For the Muad, for Goyim, behold, is Muad for Yisrael. Now the Rambam is deciding a question that was left open in the Gemara. Right? The Gemara didn't know if a Muad for Goyim is Muad for Yisrael. The Rambam decides that it is.
That's high, right?
Behold. The last three words of the second line. O Shaharag Shlosha Yisrael Trefa. Mm-hmm. Or that killed three Yisrael that are trefa, v'harka harag shalem, and afterwards it killed a full, that's a person who's not about to die. Mm-hmm. And that also is the Rambam's decision in a question the Gemara left open. The Gemara said perhaps a muad for trefa is not muad for shalem, and as you guys explained, because perhaps the trefa is a different smell. But the Rambam decides no, if it's muad for trefa, it's muad for shalem. O Shaharag uvarach, Baharag v'barach, Barag v'barach. Or that it killed and fled, killed and fled, killed and fled. Uberevi nitpas. And the fourth time it was nitpas, it was caught. Shena ba'alim chayvim ba'kofer ad shisakel ashor. For the owners don't have to pay kofer until the shore is killed. So here the Rambam brings the Gemara, but he translates it from Aramaic to Hebrew. Right, yeah. The Gemara said, "Arak la'agama." It fled to the bulrushes by the lake. That's in Aramaic. The Rambam writes in Hebrew that it barak, that it fled.
There's significance to that?
The significance is that the Rambam makes the conclusions of the Talmud accessible to Jews who don't know Aramaic.
Oh, okay.
He wrote in Hebrew exclusively. He was one of the few Rishonim, few medieval authorities that translated everything into Hebrew from Aramaic.
Well, wait a minute. Wasn't Mishneh Torah about the only thing he wrote in Hebrew?
No, I said the Rambam was one of the only medieval authorities that wrote his halakha in Hebrew.
Oh, his halakha, yeah.
The others, the other Rishonim wrote their halakhot in the Aramaic of the Talmud.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But when he wasn't writing halakha,
He wrote
in Arabic.
In Arabic.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
In Arabic. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Rambam writes, "V'chein im sikein shlosha bnei adam ke'echad," or if it endangered three people. Remember, we explained that it means it sent them to the hospital, but they didn't die. Mm-hmm. Three of them, and then they all died. O harag shlosh behemot, or if it killed three animals, back to what Tom said.
Mm-hmm.
So according to the Rambam, you can become a muad by killing three animals. You're a muad now both for animals and even for human beings.
Yeah.
Harei ze muad lahariga uva'alav mishalmim et hakofer. In all these cases, harei ze muad, the last three words of the line, behold, it's a muad for killing, and its owners pay kofer. So the Rambam is pretty strict as far as this goes. He decides in all the cases the Gemara brought up and had a question, he decides that they all, in all those cases, it becomes a muad. V'cheinim hikiru ha'edim et bal hashur v'lo hikiru et tashur b'fam rishona v'shniya v'shlishit. And so, if recognized the witnesses, the owner of the ox, and didn't recognize the ox, the first time, second time, and third time, uberivit, and the fourth time, reu shuro shaharag, and the fourth time they saw his ox that it killed, v'lo hayu yudim im ze hu hashur shaharag v'shlosha famim rishonim o acher haya, and they don't know if this is the ox that killed the three earlier times or not. So, in other words,
An identity problem.
Yeah,
like
in other words,
identify.
This guy owns a number of oxen, and we're certain that his oxen gored and killed people three times, and we warned him the first time, keep your oxen under lock and key. Happened again, we warned him a second, warned him a third time. So now we have a situation in which, even though we don't know which ox it was, the owner is muad. The ox is muad, but the owner is muad. And the Rambam paskins, the Rambam decides, it's now the middle of the second to last line, Ho'il v'hu'adu ha'ba'alim she'esh lem bibakaram shor shaharag shlosha fa'amim harei lehem lishmor kol behem tam o mehar shelo shamru mishonim et ha'kofer. Translation, since the owner was warned that he has in his flock an ox that killed three times, behold, it's upon him to watch all of his animals. And since he didn't watch, he pays the kofar. So this is an important Rambam. Because it tells us it's not really the ox that's mu'ad, it's the owner that's mu'ad. We have no evidence at all that the ox that killed the fourth time is the same ox that killed the first three. We don't even know if the first three times are the same ox or three different oxen. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So this is not about identifying a noxious ox. It's rather about putting responsibility on an owner. Right? And that's an important theoretical point that's taken a long time for us to get to. But now we got to something that may have ramifications. Because right? You could have thought differently. You could have thought, if we don't know which ox it is, then we can't say that the ox is what? Might have been a different ox every time. Doesn't matter. Last Rambam. Halakha Dalet. Zeh Shenemar B'Torah in Exodus 21:29, V'gam Ba'alav Yumat, and also the owner will die. That's a Tamar Muad. When does the Torah say that the owner has to die? With a Tamar Muad.
Either way.
No.
No.
Just a Muad. And then what the Torah says, he has to die, but kofar can be put upon him.
Oh, it's the ox.
So the Rambam says, "Mi piyashmua lamdu shechiyuv mita zo biyadei shamayim." We learned from the tradition that this culpability of death is at the hands of heaven. In other words, we don't ever, ever, ever kill an ox owner, even if his ox is a muad and killed another person. It's just Biadeshim, it's in the hands of heaven. It's a theoretical statement about culpability, about responsibility. It's more of a pedagogical statement, you can say. It doesn't mean that we ever execute someone, never, ever, ever, never execute him, even if his oxen went on a rampage and killed many, many times. Bim natan kofer hanerag nitkaperlo. And if he gave ransom for the victim, for the neharag, nitkaperlo, he's atoned for. In other words, he won't be killed at the hands of heaven because he already expiated his crime. And then we have four letters, Vav Aleph Ayin Pei, which stands for Ve'afalpi, and even though, Shah Kofer Kaparahu, Mimishkanim et mishan itchayev b'kofer ba'al korcho. And even though kofer is atonement, we mimishkanim, which means we put a lien on his property of he who's obligated in kofer against his will. You would have thought, since kofer is atonement, it only is paid voluntarily. If the guy doesn't want to pay, well, we can't force him. It's his atonement. The halakha is we force him. We take money from him against his will. Even though it's atonement, but we can make him atone. Why might we do this? The money goes, of course, to the inheritors, and we want them to get the money. We also want him to be atoned for. We don't want him to die at the hands of heaven. So even though he doesn't want to pay, we make him pay. It's to his own benefit. It's to society's benefit. The Beit Din forces him to pay. So there's just one more set of sources I brought. At the bottom of the sheet, in bold face, it says, Mishnah Masechet Erchin, Perek Gimel. Mishnah Aleph. Actually, you know what? We don't have to do that. We basically talked about the ideas already. So we'll end it at 10 o'clock, since the watch says we should end. We did pretty good, I think.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah.
We did.
So we still have the problem of it killing the...
the non-Jew.
Yeah, the non-Jew, the idolaters.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, and this is actually a good way to end because it's interesting and it's important. According to the letter of the Mishnaic and Talmudic law, someone, a Jew, kills a non-Jew is not liable for the death penalty. That's the letter of the law. Now, of course, it's forbidden to kill a non-Jew, lest it need to be said. But it's forbidden, but it's not culpable of the death penalty. Now, of course, it doesn't really matter, practically speaking, because the halakha already decided that a Jew who kills a Jew will never be subject to the death penalty.
Right, either.
But still, theoretically speaking, there is a great, great deal of discrimination here between Jews and non-Jews. The minute the halakha says, again in the letter of the law, that a Jew who kills a non-Jew is not to be stoned, then all the more so an ox that kills a non-Jew is not to be stoned. So this is very consistent with Talmudic law. I'll take the phone call because we're finished.
We're finished. We are.
Yeshayahu, I just finished my class 1 second ago.